Hello from Brooklyn. I'm Brendan Hart, and welcome to Super Cities, a no BS deep dive conversation about the people and trends moving cities forward. All views expressed are my own and do not reflect our sponsors or partners. Let's get into it. On this episode of Super Cities, we do a deep dive on all things law enforcement, company building, and change innovation with Dom Pellegrini, director of major agencies at Mark 43. Dom tells us about his path from Harvard ROTC to becoming a Marine Corps officer to Goldman Sachs and finally to Mark 43. We learn a lot about cities from the ground up in this episode. Let's hear from Dom. Dom, appreciate your time.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Pleasure to be here.
Let's set context a little bit. Talk me through your story. How did you end up at Mark 43?
Yeah, sure. So about 3 years back now, I was in the finance world, trying to make it there. And, coming from the Marine Corps, you never lack a sense of mission or purpose. And, Goldman Sachs is a great firm, great company. Really appreciate my time there, but felt like there was something missing. And so I was testing the waters a little bit. Just through a fortunate connection, I was put in touch with one of the original members of the Mark 43 team, and not really even trying to get a job, just seeing what they were up to because it sounded interesting. And, I described my background to her and she said, "Hey, well, we're hiring. Why don't you meet the team?" And the rest is kind of history.
When was that?
That was 3 years ago. So that was about this time, 2015.
Cool. And so you mentioned having, mission focus in the Marine Corps, and then you transitioned out, and this is sort of a common thing for people who have served. In addition to sort of thinking about how you could join sort of a mission-driven company, were there other things that you were considering at this period of your life in terms of professional sort of goals or specific sectors, or was it really just all about team and mission?
Team and mission was a big part. I also think I wanted to be part of building something. In the big investment banks, I'm just a washed up infantryman, another cog in the wheel. I don't think the trading desk missed me even a day when I left. And I really just wanted to be a part of building something. So that was another kind of criteria as I was looking. And thankfully, I found, a great place where I could kind of grow with the company while having that mission and purpose. And at the same time, a fabulous business opportunity too.
Great. Let's dive into Mark 43. So Mark 43's mission is to empower communities and their governments with new technologies that improve the safety and quality of life for all. How did Mark 43 start? What was sort of founding story of the business?
Yeah. So you had three college students, Harvard graduate, or at the time Harvard students. They had a project. They were in the engineering school at Harvard. Harvard has one. It's a little known fact, I think. They were in the engineering school and they were essentially tasked with solving a problem. And they got hooked up with the Massachusetts State Police out in Springfield. They were trying to do some advanced gang analytics for a task force out there. As they were kind of digging into the data, they realized that the source of that data was broken, and they kind of came up with this idea. Let's fix the source, right? Let's fix the source. And they found out that this thing called CAD, computer aided dispatch, and RMS, records management system, is really the entire business process management of a police department. It's really the organs that make, at least from the technology side, that make a police department run. Fast forward a little bit, they were testing around the country, figuring out, okay, who would let them rebuild this thing. Most of the incumbent technologies, 30-year-old companies, heavy install bases, on-prem. Fortunately, they found a very innovative forward-thinking leader in Washington, D.C. Metro Police Department, Chief Kathy Lanier. She said, you know, my system is so bad right now, I can take a shot with these three college kids. And, you know, the rest is kind of history. They built the product over the period of about 15 months with a team of eight. We launched the project or the product in August of 2015 with 15,000 users in the DC metro area, and really haven't looked back since. We're able to build a company off that.
So can we just dig into this founding story a little bit? So Metro DC Police Department, I assume, has some unique characteristics, but also shares characteristics of technology,
architecture, every police department thinks that they're unique in one way or another, right?
What was the solution? So through this class at Harvard, they sort of sourced the problem, it sounds like, the founders. And what was the initial solution for the DC Police Department specifically?
The DC Police Department was on a legacy system that was at the time pretty popular throughout the United States. I think, they had made a ton of investment on the sales side and less so on the innovation or engineering side. So I think that they were looking at either building a custom solution in-house or nothing. I mean, there was really, there was just a ton of stagnation in the industry. And therefore, you know, big opportunities identified by these, you know, young college grads that really had some tremendous foresight to identify this. But there weren't a lot of options, I guess, is the bottom line for DC. Hence, you know, they turned to the last resort, which ended up paying off for them in spades, really. They're tremendously happy with the results and have been.
But was the solution totally customized to the DC use case, or did the founding team learn pretty quickly that the problem set was not DC specific, but that it was a sort of legacy system challenge?
Right. I think so the founding team certainly did research outside of DC, found one that the problem existed everywhere. There were common themes as far as what the pains of these old systems were. And they sought to address those themes in the DC instance specifically. Obviously, DC had a heavy hand in guiding them as they built the kind of original instance of the Mark 43 platform called Cobalt in DC. So DC does have a unique instance. That being said, once DC was launched up and running, we were able to build a company off that, get funding, hire more people. We realized that, you know, DC almost had too heavy a hand in that initial instance. If we were going to build a scalable SaaS platform that was going to serve, 18,000 police departments just in the United States alone, who do things in a vast variety of ways, right? That we were going to have to rebuild this in a more scalable way. So basically, DC has their one instance. They're now actually transitioning off of that to our common platform.
Oh, interesting.
And then all of our other clients are on the kind of V2, I would say.
Yeah, right.
The Mark 43 RMS.
Got it. Cool. Yeah. So what is V2? What is the scalable platform that you all built out? And sort of two questions there. What problem is it solving for police departments? And what is the sort of platform features, the core features of the platform?
For the RMS, so there's two specific product, or at least traditionally there were two specific products that we are now kind of, that we've now kind of reinvented. One is the computer-aided dispatch, which is, you know, receive 911 call, punch in information, dispatch officer. Officer comes back to the station, writes a report. That's kind of where the demarcation is into RMS, report writing, and then all of the downstream activities that happen from there. I think the overall problem, like the bigger problems, I think, with the legacy systems on the RMS side specifically, I mean, real-time data was a huge issue. Everybody talks about data-driven policing and real-time data, but with on-prem heavy install systems, that concept is really almost impossible to if you're not doing kind of a cloud-based model.
And so for the non-technical listener, that just means data is localized. It can't be aggregated. It can't be distributed in sort of any meaningful real-time way.
Or is efficient. It's really the efficiency. So what you had is you have teams, especially in a large, high-volume area like DC, for example. It takes a major personnel lift to do the things that you just described when you have this old model.
Got it.
Right? And being, you know, you leveraging modern technologies, web-based systems, you kind of eliminate the need for that heavy personnel commitment to do things like real-time distribution of data. I mean, the business process and the workflows alone were really for the most part, were built around old clunky systems.
Right.
Whereas now we get into like the configuration aspect, which is another differentiator, I think, of our platform versus others. So there's the real-time data aspect, but also the configuration possibilities with a SaaS platform as opposed to single instance installs really allows a department to do their business processes the way they want to do them and not create policy and process around bad software. And that's another, I think, one of the big themes that we were trying to solve and are still trying to solve.
Yeah, yeah. So maybe let's zoom out from the sort of specific technical solution and talk about the challenges. I mean, you're talking about things that industry acknowledges as sort of efficiency and best practices, but it seems like before Mark 43, these types of solutions were not being delivered to critical agencies like a police department. Is that fair? Is that accurate?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And this product is really the way that departments do business. That there is not another platform end to end that they're using. So I think there's two. You can kind of look at this two different ways. You can look at it from the perspective of the police department, and you can look at it from the perspective of the vendor, right?
Mm-hmm.
The police department, this is mission critical software,
right.
So they do very complicated things that have real repercussions, and not many guys are working at police departments. Unfortunately, there hasn't been a lot of incentivization for innovating and go with, you know, if something works and it's 30-year-old company, it might be 30-year-old, it might be clunky, and it might be kind of dated, but it works.
Right.
And when, you know, the repercussions are serious, you know, when we're talking about people going to prison, life and death in some circumstances,
right.
why change when you can keep kind of the status quo?
Right.
I think there has certainly been some catalysts for change as of late. But that was, I think, one of the things driving the police departments to stay with what they know, right? Like they stay
right.
with what they know. Why would I move to this thing called the cloud?
Sure.
Like, why would I do that?
Sure,
why would
sure.
I go with a company that was founded by three college graduates in 2014?
Right.
When I have, you know, Northrop Grumman who built this
right.
this platform that works.
And, right. Right.
Even though the code is 30 years old.
Right.
So there's that aspect makes the barrier to entry really, really high. From the vendor's standpoint, and I don't want to like knock these vendors too hard, they're in these departments, but there's 18,000 police departments in the United States. They all do things differently and they all are unique. And when you're trying to serve each individual instance, it becomes impossible to a certain extent, right? So then
right.
you have very regional specific platforms, or you have platforms that service like the major cities, right?
And at the expense of the
at the
smaller
expense,
cities
exactly.
or other departments, right?
Exactly. So from the vendor standpoint, it's really hard to keep up. And I don't even think they meant to do it, but they kind of got caught in this, you know, we're managing hundreds of systems throughout the United States. How, when we're just spending that much resource managing all these systems because our code has branched 100 different ways, how could we possibly innovate and kind of take the next step when we would have to throw that all out and start from scratch? Because that's what you have to do to build a native cloud platform that is scalable across.
Yeah, that I mean, that's interesting to me to think about. I mean, there has been real innovation in policing, in strategies, in tactics, in a sort of approach to a force in a neighborhood, right?
Absolutely.
A lot of that happened in New York, where we're recording. But it sounds like that was never paired with a technology that would develop tools to enforce this sort of new approach. Is that right?
I think, yeah. So that's definitely right, especially when we talk about the central repository of everything that you're doing and the central business management function of the department, at least from the technical side. There were lots of innovations, I think, outside of that, right? Like you had, you know, tasers, body cameras, you have tons of bells and whistles that have certainly, I mean, especially New York City, I mean, you got a multi-billion-dollar budget, they got every bell and whistle going, and lots of them have, you know, done tremendous things for the communities that they serve, right? But the bottom line is, I think vendors specifically, like, and the departments were looking at all these shiny things and seeing that as innovation, while again, just allowing that underlying repository and driver of how the department does business,
right,
just letting that, you know, slip into stagnation,
right,
and maintaining the status quo was good enough.
Yeah.
And maybe some of those other technologies were distracting from that particular
right.
issue, but yeah, I think there was a ton of innovation outside of that core platform, but almost close to zero.
Interesting. So if a police department sort of understands the value of the Mark 43 platform, like the sort of technology value,
mm-hmm.
What are some of the other challenges that would slow down sort of adoption? Regulatory, procurement,
yeah,
political. I mean, what are sort of the other things that police departments, you all, the collaboration has to think about to go from legacy system to cloud-based SaaS?
Yeah, I talked a little bit about incentivization. So what incentivizes a police leader who you know, if you're the commissioner of a big city, you're a political figure, right?
Right.
What incentivizes those guys or the people under who work for them? What's incentivizing them, right, to innovate? In some cases, you know, some departments do a better job of others in incentivizing that
sure.
particular drive. But I would say broadly speaking, there's not a ton of incentivization for innovation below, you know, below the chief commissioner level, just because that's kind of unfortunately how some government works.
And it's probably not not unique to police departments.
No, exactly. Right. I think that you could say that broadly, not to speak too broadly, but government is known for that.
Yes.
We know that all too well through our Marine Corps experience, right? So that there's definitely that. I would also say that the traditional procurement model, where the RFP based system is really what drives a lot of this, I think has also disserviced.
Just give us the quick what is the RFP?
So an RFP, request for proposal, right? Essentially, what would happen is you have the department looks at, okay, these are what are all my list of every requirement they could possibly think of for a particular system, and you're talking thousands upon thousands of requirements that nobody's in reality is going to read in the aggregate. You go to every single, you know, shop in the department. You say, okay, like what are your 20 things that you need
to
do?
This is the wish list.
This is the wish list. And let's just stack them all up, put them in the proposal. And we're going to publish that now to
one proposal.
Yep. One proposal. And we're going to publish that to the industry and say, respond. And if you meet the criteria, you know, whoever best fits the criteria, we will vote and we will select you. And that's it. So this, you know, encourage competition encourage, you know, fair, you know, anti-corruption, fair, fair market, et cetera. But I think with that system, I think very well intentioned, but what it's turned into, at least from what I've seen specific to us, but I think this is generally the case, is, you know, you have the same consulting groups who are being hired to write these RFPs.
Right.
And that's not to knock those groups,
sure.
You know, they kind of are rinse and repeating the requirements. Therefore, the same vendors are responding. They know how to respond rather than innovating and crafting and creating things that are going to make progress. You're just continuously reinventing the wheel, right? And
right.
You're putting more effort responding to proposals as opposed to actually innovating on software. So rather than saying, hey, police department, look at, or you pick your police department or government agency generally, but rather than saying, hey, like, how do you think this should look? What are your processes and how can we optimize them? How can we make them better? It's like, basically, what do we do now? What do you do now? Let's write it all down and like, okay, we're just going to continue to roll the inch the ball
forward. It's like the benefit of incumbency.
Yes, right? Absolutely.
Yeah, and you see this in the defense industry and in a spectacular way that it sort of perpetuates itself.
Yes.
Right?
Yes, and, absolutely.
And that those aren't conditions that lend themselves to disruption, right?
No, definitely not. And again, not to knock anybody in particular, like with, especially with some of these larger systems throughout the country, that's the same players that are involved
right.
And then again, there's no interest in seeing a flashy startup do anything in those situations.
That's interesting. So what are some of the interesting trends that you all are sort of seeing in the law enforcement policing space? I mean, are there particular departments that are doing really interesting work, or is the industry moving in a direction? Is the technology that you and other companies are providing policing sort of supercharging efficiency or you know, what do you all find sort of interesting in this space other than the adoption of the technology, which is obviously a core component?
Yeah. I think on the adoption of the technology, it's still, slower than we would like it to be.
Sure.
And there's still not, you're starting to see some more players that are looking at providing a similar service to us, but it's still just not, there's still a fundamental decision. When I go to a police department, there's still a fundamental decision that needs to be made. Do we want to go on-prem kind of traditional model, or do we want to go, you know, SaaS Mark 43 way?
Right.
There's not really another option presently. So I don't know how much progress there is there. When we start talking about, my specific purview, I guess. That being said, I think, you know, I think I've seen an evolution. I've definitely seen an evolution. And again, because, you know, I'm in the SaaS world, I can speak especially to the adoption of SaaS.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen an evolution in the mindset. Rather than me having to educate and evangelize SaaS, which was the case probably 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I think most people have come around to this idea that, there's a reason why the rest of the business world has gone to this model.
Right.
And so I think, rather than having to make the SaaS argument, we can make a better value proposition than that.
Mm-hmm.
And now we can start talking about, AI has been a big theme as of late that we've seen. So we moved from SaaS. In order to have AI, you need to have SaaS first, right?
Right.
So you do have police departments talking about AI. How can AI responsibly assist those departments in dealing with the vast quantities of data that they're now collecting? You know, you have petabytes on petabytes of data being collected now by these police departments, especially when everybody's, you know, standard issue pretty soon for everybody is going to be, a body camera, mm-hmm. a cell phone,
right?
a tablet,
right,
in a hotspot, if you need, you know what I mean?
So these are all connected devices within this sort of ecosystem, right?
So we're not, I'm not saying we're there.
No, right. But that's where it should go, right?
Absolutely. And people are talking about it, at least that being standard issue. So, you know, you have the CIOs or chiefs of departments no longer, or at least now they're making the case that should be the standard set as opposed to the cell phone being a nice to have, right? The mobile device, everybody's got one, like we should issue them to our to our officers. The same with the body cameras.
Sure.
This is no longer, that argument is kind of, that ship has sailed for the most part. I think you're seeing very, very broad adoption of body cameras. So with that, you're collecting tons and tons and tons of data.
Mm-hmm.
And so like, what do you do with it?
Yeah, right.
What do you do with it? Yeah, how do we make sense of it? How do we look at it? And again, how do we act? How do we get actionable information out of these vast quantities of data? And people are like, well, I mean, AI is probably something that we're going to have to look at,
mm-hmm,
because we're certainly not going to be able to hire all the developers required or even business analysts or whoever would otherwise be looking at, you know, thousands and thousands of hours of the body camera footage, right? Or whatever, pick your slice of the data pie, right?
Right. And I assume it's there's also really interesting applications in the not only in AI, but virtual reality,
yep,
related to training,
exactly,
and so, sort of workforce development. Are you seeing any of that?
Definitely. So from the VR, a lot of this comes down to budget, right?
Yeah, sure.
So, I mean, virtual reality trainers are much more efficient, if you look at total cost of ownership, much, mm-hmm, more efficient than buying the simunitions, hiring the role players, paying the overtime for the trainers. So there's all these things that come into play with virtual reality. Yeah, your upfront cost might be, or the subscription might be, that might be a chunk of your operational budget. But
right,
so what? Over time, you're going to save on all those other costs. So that's definitely something. And I'm seeing more and more companies pop up that are providing that service, and some of the kind of deeply, and you know, the deeply ingrained players are also like getting into that space and talking about it
specifically to law enforcement.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay. So in a city, does the police department tend to be a leading indicator or a lagging indicator on this sort of adoption curve? It seems like a police department, you know, the New York City Police Department has a critical mission, a sort of tangible mission in a way that another department that's not dealing with public safety does not. Does that lead to police departments being earlier adopters than sanitation departments for technology, or is that very much sort of location specific and people specific?
I think a lot of it is location specific, only because I think there's a personality aspect to that. I think when you have innovative leaders who are not too concerned about, you know, putting one foot in front of the other toward their pension, I think that that is driving change more than to say that the police industry generally is. I think oftentimes you find innovative leaders in the policing industry, which are kind of leading the way for their cities. I, mm-hmm, think that can, mm-hmm, definitely be true. But I would say that it's more of a case by case thing from what I've seen.
Sure.
And it's very personality based.
Got it.
Based on, you know, the leadership of that police department, of that city. You know, I've seen it come from the mayor down, but I've also seen it kind of more grassroots. It may start with just some captain in the police department who found, you know, if it's Mark 43 or pick your technology,
right,
and kind of worked its way up the chain.
Well, I was wondering about that. I assume that the nature of policing is that people tend to stay in jobs for a long period of time. So there could be a generational sort of issue. You know, younger police officers are more fluent in technology, sort of utilize some of this stuff in their personal lives. Do you see any of that sort of the, you know, maybe the younger police officers with whom you engage tend to be a little bit more fluent in why a Mark 43 type platform would be beneficial to their job?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's definitely a generational thing. Like, there's no question about it. Now, that's not to say that folks of an older generation who didn't grow up in the connected mobile device age, some of them get it, but guys who are newer to the force now and did grow up with an iPhone, it's intuitive to them, right?
Right.
Like, they expect this kind of they expect their applications to be in the cloud. They expect it to be mobile. They expect it to be updated
right
as frequently as your Facebook or your Gmail is, or pick your technology that these guys grew up with. They definitely expect that, and it is second nature to them. So that just shows you kind of the pain if those guys have to adapt an old system.
Right.
They scream loud,
right?
And that's advantage to us and others who are kind of innovating the space. But sometimes those yells don't make it all the way up. And, you know, as you know, we've been trained, some of us, to salute, and some guys just, you know, salute. But I would say it's definitely a generational thing. But I think that there is definitely a groundswell and a critical mass that's being reached of guys that were brought up in the iPhone age,
right?
Who are entering these departments and really pushing on the leadership to make sure that these technologies are adopted that are really second nature to them and that they expect because they've grown up with it.
And that makes sense. I mean, if these police officers are the ones on the beat, right? They're the sort of operational level or the tactical level of policing. It seems to make sense that they need digital tools that they're comfortable with.
So this past weekend was the Major City Chiefs Association conference, and the IACP, the International Association of Chiefs of Police, which is the largest police conference in the world.
And like, how many people are we talking about? Or departments?
Thousands at the IACP. Major City Chiefs is 50 something.
Okay.
That being said, I had a assistant chief of one of the larger departments in the country. I had a conversation with him about exactly this. He's like, in this, you know, new age, with my younger guys especially, if I send a guy out into the field without a body camera, without a cell phone, it's like if I were sending him out into the field without a gun 20 years ago. Like, that's what...
Really?
Yeah, he said that's almost verbatim. And I think that's right. I mean, I think that's right, and I think it makes sense. And I think those tools, sometimes you need your firearm, sure, but those other tools are going to be much more important on a day-to-day basis, especially when we start talking about data-driven policing, community policing, like affecting real change. The gun, for the most part, has been, has caused more problems than it's solved in some cities as of late.
Sure.
So, but I found that very compelling that he said that.
And I think it basically traces with an experience that the Department of Defense has gone through in called the last 15 years. Like, the young people on the ground require a different set of digital tools to do their job well, so that they don't have to resort to, to the equivalent of a firearm, right? If there's sort of an escalation of force, everyone wants it to de-escalate quickly, right? But in order to do that, we need to provide people the appropriate tools
and training too. And I think training. is the probably the more important piece than the tools. And then I think there's a third piece, which I think is sometimes overlooked, is the personnel too. It's like, who are you recruiting? right? Like, what does the talent pool look like?
Right. Interesting.
How effectively are you retaining people that have the experience to help de-escalate a situation? That's another theme just generally in policing right now is, you know, recruitment problems in certain areas and retention problems and stuff like that. It's a really tough time to be a cop in the U.S. It's a big challenge for these guys right now. And I think it ties directly into that.
Is the human capital component, is that also a challenge of incentives? Is it job incentives?
I think that can vary pretty drastically between municipalities, right? But of course, like there's certainly, everybody has some sense. Again, we talked about mission at the beginning of this. Every cop who decides to put on the badge, you know, there is that. There's the mission piece.
Right.
But there's a lot of things that are weighing on that.
Sure.
At what point do they outweigh that?
Mm-hmm.
And so what incentives are we putting in place to ensure that, you know, the anti-police sentiment and the stress of the job, the overworking of police officers because you don't have the numbers. At what point does that kind of tip the balance and guy just says, you know, I want to do something else. I want to do something more exciting where I'm not putting my life in danger.
And is there any anecdotal evidence? I mean, is the challenge initial recruitment or is the challenge retaining? I'm sure it's both.
It's definitely both, but I think the one underlying issue is they don't have the data to support either, and they don't know how to study this. And this goes down to, again, the legacy systems that are being used to track these metrics. Now, police departments are unique from their HR structure as compared to businesses, right?
Right.
Businesses have adopted great HR management tools, right? And they've been able to collect data and stuff like that to inform decisions that they're making about recruitment and retention. There's a huge need in the policing community to have those tools. So they've tried to kind of fit a square peg in a round hole in a lot of places that have the budget to do so. Sometimes they don't have the budget to do so.
Sure.
To have, you know, HR management tools that were used in business apply to a police department. There's usually not a one-to-one swap there.
Right.
And so it doesn't work great.
Right.
And so that's like another problem that we've looked at as we kind of build a greater public safety platform.
Mm-hmm.
What are the other things we want to look into? And there is a huge need for this HR management because the problem is on both the retention and the recruitment end.
Right.
And the data doesn't exist to inform, like, who should we be recruiting?
Right.
Like, why did these people leave?
Right.
And data obviously can inform all that, and they just don't have the infrastructure in place to do it, generally speaking.
Right, right. And so you could imagine these are different layers of the stack, right?
Absolutely.
Couple rapid fire questions to close out. If listeners want to do some research on interesting things happening in the world of policing, whether that's at a municipal level or national level, do you know of any resources, journals, sites that you all think are particularly valuable?
I don't think there's anything great.
Yeah.
From a journalistic perspective.
Yeah.
Which also I think
that's a problem.
It's a problem for the industry. I don't think there's a good voice that's saying, like, hey, you know, I think that policing journal world, there's very few publications. I don't think they have a lot of budget. There's not a lot of resources. So, you know, it's very hard for them to compete with the headlines that are coming out in, you know, pick your newspaper that wants to kind of beat on the cops on any given day. So I don't think there's not a great forum for that, especially for people who are not police officers. To learn about policing, I haven't really seen a good one.
Yeah, that's seems to be an opportunity. I mean, it's so important, and if there's a citizen component here, right?
Yep.
We need to know what
Yeah, we have like a policing news Slack channel, and you know, that I think that's just like a series of people posting stuff from their Google alerts.
Yeah, right.
The cities that we're interested in, and so it's just like a it's a mishmash of things, but there's no like one source publication that, you know, I think is doing a great job that really can speak to like a wider audience as opposed to just people who are in the police industry.
Got it. On a personal note, what are you reading or listening to, or you're traveling a lot? Are you into podcasts like this one or not really?
I listen to, I have like my set of like daily podcasts that I can pick from.
Yeah.
I try to listen outside of kind of my professional world. So
probably a sane strategy.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm reading an older book, Pillars of the Earth, Ken Follett book.
Historical fiction
kind of. So that's what I'm into right now. It's a pretty thick book, but it's a nice quick read, especially when I'm on airplanes and stuff and trying to unwind. It's a good way to do so.
Yeah, that sounds good. Let's close out with, where can listeners find you, Mark 43, online, Twitter accounts and social media accounts?
Yeah, absolutely. So www.mark43.com, and that can kind of direct you to all of our, you know, our Twitter handle, Facebook as well. We're pretty active. We got a blog on the website, and you can find out your
That's
latest.
Going to be the next platform.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, there's a lot of ways we can go with
see
that.
Your byline.
Yeah.
Dom Pellegrini, Mark 43. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure. Appreciate Cheers. It.
That does it for this episode of Super Cities. Before we go, some real talk. Cities feel broken, too expensive, too crowded, too chaotic. So we created Super Cities to elevate the people and trends moving cities forward. This movement is just getting started, so please rate, review, and subscribe to Super Cities and tag us using hashtag Super Cities. Your support really helps, and I'm thankful for it. This is Brendan Hart and Super Cities, signing off for now.